Coming up on this episode, footballing lessons the Clough way.
And I came on and I never gave the ball away. And then I got absolute rollicking at the end of the game off Cloughy because I didn't take anybody on. I said, I didn't give the ball away, boss. Yes, but you didn't take anybody on.
Remembering the football genius of John Robertson.
It was easy for me because all he used to say was give it to the little fat lad, and that was Robbo. And then the rest was history, you know, just give him it. Get the ball, give him it. That was my job.
There's the challenge of facing one of the game's giants.
The only thing I can remember of that game, I'm on the near post, there's a corner coming in, and Mickey Joy has come and stood next to me. Oh. And he's about 6'10".
Massive, isn't he?
And I'm thinking, yeah. Don't put it in the near post. Please don't put it in the near post.
Plus, memories of playing cricket with Cloughy.
He opened the batting, opened the bowling, stood at slip all game, didn't run for one ball, just told you to run for it. But we had a few games. We played at Trent Bridge, played at Derby. Jeff Boycott was his big mate.
All that and much more coming up in this episode.
It's the Green Jumper Pod, and for this episode, I've come to meet a guest who was a European Cup winner with Brian Clough. He was described by Cloughy as a fine young left-back, an absolute natural. He made well over 100 first-team appearances for Nottingham Forest, including coming on as a vital substitute in the 1980 European Cup final. I'm delighted to say hello to Bryn Gunn.
Hello. Pleased to meet you again.
Lovely to see you, Bryn. Now, it was way back in 1975 when Brian Clough described you as a fine young left-back. In fact, in his column in the Football Post, he said, without fear of contradiction, he's the best young prospect I have ever seen in that position. I think you were about 17 at the time. It must have been fantastic to get that kind of praise from Cloughy himself.
He never said it to me first, I can assure you that. Yeah, I did play left-back to start with. I was here before Brian Clough. Alan Brown signed me. I originally came as a right-back, but Cloughy turned me into a left-back.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because he was coming out with these complimentary remarks in the media, but he didn't actually, behind the scenes, say that to you.
No. If you got the thumbs up and a pat on the back, that's all you'd get from Cloughy. You know, usually you get a bucking or something like that.
So he'd keep your feet on the ground.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Did he used to give you any specific advice or tactics or anything to help you play?
It was easy for me because all he used to say was give it to the little fat lad, and that was Robbo. And then the rest was history, you know, just give him it. Get the ball, give him it. That was my job.
And you did it for many years. What was it like playing alongside the great John Robertson?
Robbo was the best player I've ever played with. And most of the lads will tell you that. But yeah, Robbo did everything, defended for you. Just give him the ball, and he was a magician.
Yes, he was certainly my favourite player at the time. Can you remember your first meeting with Cloughy?
Well, I was apprentice then. I was probably just 16, sweeping the corridors and cleaning the toilets. He probably chucked his shoes in, and then you have to clean them, whoever they hit. So that was him. Yeah, we just remember him being very loud at the time. So, yeah, we just do what we're told. That was it.
Now, your debut was in a League Cup match at home to Rotherham. Did he give you much notice that you were starting?
No, not really. I think Liam, was it Liam? Liam O'Kane, I think he got injured.
That's right.
And next thing, the team goes up and my name was on it. You know, I remember Sammy Chapman playing. I can't remember much about the game. I think we won 5-2,
5-1. 5-1, yes, yes. In fact, if you can see, I've got a cutting here. Original cutting from that time. Forest call up gun is the headline.
There must have been nobody else at the time then.
It says Forest bring in young defender Bryn Gunn for his first team debut in tonight's League Cup first round second leg tie at home to Rotherham. And it says here you'd only signed full time professional forms a few days previously, your 17th birthday.
Yeah, 21st of August, my birthday, so whenever that was.
Yes, just a few days later.
Yeah. I'd been with him to Ireland in a couple of pre-season games and stuff like that. But yeah, he chucked me in. I enjoyed it. It's always easy when you win, isn't it? You know.
Well, 5-1 isn't bad, is it really?
No.
And here's a cutting that'll make you smile. The match report, the headline, Elegant Gun in Forest 5-1 Revel?
I'm not sure about elegant, but it's yeah, it was nice at the time. When I was a young kid, I used to get it down and play it, and I had no fear. It's as you get older, you get a bit more fear and scared of giving the ball away, but them days, you just do it for fun.
Well, you had some very complimentary comments in this report. It says, Rotherham moved their fullback to right wing to try and pressure debut boy Bryn Gunn in last night's League Cup match. But the gamble didn't pay off, for the Elegant Gun strolled through the game as Forest coasted home 5-1. It says you were calm, composed and looked completely at home in the back four. Did you feel at home in the back four?
I'm like a swan on the top of the water. You know, you're calm underneath, everything's going. As I say, you got people in front of you who helped me. You know, when I used to play right back, I had Martin O'Neill. Play left back, I had Robbo in front of me. They did my defending, really. All I had to do was get it and give it.
You were playing with some top players, which helped. And, of course, Frank Clark,
yeah,
because he moved, I think, from left back into central defence. So you got that spot then. How important was it playing with someone as experienced as Frank Clark, who'd come from Newcastle?
Frank taught me a lot of things that I'd never heard of. I was looking for digs and he actually put me up in his house with his family, which I still owe him for that, you know. But Frank was a modelled professional, a little bit over the top for me. He wouldn't wash his car or cut his grass after a Wednesday because it's too strenuous. Uh-huh. But that's what worked for Frank, you know.
Yeah.
He taught me to eat the right things on a Friday, and which I thought, you know, you just have pie and chips or something like that, but you have all the proper stuff, and he was the first I knew that had it.
Well, it's funny you should say that you lodged with him, because in his autobiography, he says that Cluffy asked him if he would put you up, and of course, you know, he did.
He probably said no, but Cluffy made him, thinking about it, yeah.
Well, I think he probably hoped that some of Frank's experience would rub off on you. And the funny thing is, in his autobiography, he says you weren't a minute's problem, but they did have difficulty making you drink. And they didn't mean alcohol, him and his wife, any liquid at all. Can you remember why that was?
No, to be honest, I can't, no. No, I don't know.
You can't remember.
I haven't heard that one.
You haven't heard that one?
No. Yeah.
Well, I guess you were away from home, weren't you? And
I left home when I was 16
to
come up into digs and stuff like that. And when you're a professional, you have to find your own digs after that.
Yeah.
So I was looking, trying to get here, there and everywhere. And Frank said, well, I'll put you up for 2, 3, 4 weeks. I can't remember now.
Yes.
But he looked after me big time, him and his family. Lovely. Yeah.
And that was in Loudham, I think, in the village of Loudham.
Holt Close,
yes,
or something
that's
like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I lived at the other end of the village at the time, and I did sometimes see him wash his car, but obviously not after a Wednesday.
Not after a Wednesday. We still have a drink in Magna Carta, and I still see that house, you know, where it was. But I used to go and see the wife now, but it was the girlfriend at the time, get the train in and to Nottingham and come back to Pranks. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the game after your debut was a league match against Notts County. I think Forest lost, but...
Lost 1-0.
That's it.
Les Brad, 89th minute. Lee Scanlon, left winger, crossed it.
Oh, Ian.
Ian Scanlon crossed it, Les Brad, far post, 89th minute. But they built it up about me playing left back and Steve Carter, right winger.
So I
had quite a good game that day, and
yes.
So I came out on top, but we lost the game. So,
can you remember though what happened after the final whistle on the pitch?
Did I get kissed by a girl? Yeah,
you did. Yes, you remember that?
Because I lost all my calmness apparently, so I got told. So, but I don't know who the girl was.
No.
I always remember the girl saying, running on and giving me a big kiss.
A week later, there was an article in the Football Post by John Lawson. It's called Gunn Blasts a Forest Team Place. And it says, as Bryn Gunn trooped off the field at the end of the Big City Derby, a young girl ran half the length of the field to plant a kiss on the Forest youngster's face. In doing so, she achieved something that Notts County's strikers had failed to do in 90 minutes... upset the youngster's composure.
That's probably right. I didn't know what was happening.
At least it was a kiss, because I remember reading in Gary Mills' book that I think it was at Leeds, after a match, a woman actually spat in his face.
A bit of class, that is. No, I've never had that one.
No, a kiss is much better. Looking back, though, you played 10 consecutive first-team matches, including that debut. And in particular, September 75, Brian Clough was full of praise for your performance in a goalless draw at Chelsea. The defensive lineup, I don't know whether you can remember who you were playing alongside. No. Middleton, Anderson, Gunn, Chapman and Clark. And Brian said, referring to you, the lad was up against Charlie Cook.
Charlie Cook was about, I know, a very good player in his day, but he was a little getting on when I was playing against him, to respect, you know.
Brian says, it's fair to say there was a generation between them, but you would never have noticed. Bryn retained his composure and played a valuable part in us getting a result.
The only thing I can remember of that game, I'm on the near post, there's a corner coming in, and Mickey Joy has come and stood next to me. Oh, and he's about 6'10" or so. And I'm thinking, don't put it in the near post. Please don't put it in the near post. So, but yeah, I remember parts of the game.
Yeah. He was colossal, wasn't he, Mickey Joy?
He was a big boy, yeah.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about that match, there's a picture here from one of the newspapers, and it shows you next to Chelsea veteran Charlie Cook, as it says, and you're watching Sammy Chapman and Ian Hutchinson.
He used to take long throws, didn't he? Windmill.
So there were popular long throws in those days.
Yeah, he was one of the first. He could chuck it a long way.
I think that was at Stamford Bridge, so there'd have been 21,000 or so at the game.
I couldn't have told you that was a 0-0. I couldn't remember the result.
So, well, it was good for you, a clean sheet.
That was my job, to get a clean sheet, as Cluffy would say.
Exactly. I mean, at Stamford Bridge, with that amount of spectators, it could have been intimidating for some people. But, I mean, how did you handle it?
You just do. You know, you could play in, we have done, we've played in front of 100,000 people at Barcelona somewhere.
Yeah.
But I could hear my teammate talking to me, not the crowd.
Right.
Why that happens, I don't know. But you're so engrossed in, you know, what you're doing.
Because I remember Cluffy saying that when Nigel made his debut, Nigel said the biggest impact on him was the crowd and the noise from the crowd. But you managed to block it out.
Yeah, I didn't have that problem, to be honest. I felt a little bit sorry for Nigel when he first came in, because Cluffy the gaffer, we all thought, picked on him when he shouldn't have done. You know, it might have been my fault, but he blamed Nigel for it, and vice versa. It was wrong at the time, but then after a few games, it turned, you know.
Yes, yeah. I guess it was always going to be difficult, because Clough would want to try and show that his son wasn't a favourite.
And he went the other way too much, probably. The other side, yeah.
Yeah. In that same month of that Chelsea game, John Lawson, the journalist, wrote in the Football Post, "The exciting emergence of fullback Bryn Gunn continues to capture most of the limelight as the 17-year-old starlet," you like the word starlet, "turned in another accomplished performance against Plymouth." Were you aware of this sort of media coverage, and did it affect you at all?
I didn't think it did, but as you'll come to it in a bit, I sort of went missing for 2 or 3 years, you know.
Mm.
Now, whether it did or not, in my head it didn't, but I just dropped off the planet, so...
It's a lot of success and praise to come to a young player, isn't it, all of a sudden?
I think I'm one of them players, down-to-earth players. Yep. You know, I don't like big heads. I don't like people like that. You know, it's not for me.
No. Now, you just got on with the job and obviously impressed Clough, although and probably until a certain game at Manchester City in the League Cup.
First half, not the second half. Peter Barnes roasted me. Rodney Marsh nutmegged me. I always remember that, because that was the first proper professional who's ever nutmegged me. But Peter Barnes just absolutely slaughtered me the first half. Tried to kick him, couldn't kick him, couldn't catch him to kick him. So, but yeah, we I think we lost 2-1 that night.
Yes,
but
that's
I did
right.
get
you
a roasting, fair enough, you know.
Yeah. Of all the players, I mean, he went on to be an England star, didn't he?
Yeah, he's one of the better players you'll ever play against, but he had a good night and I didn't.
Yeah,
you know,
So. That sort of brought an end to that run of matches for you. But on a positive note, I was looking through the records and you did come on as substitute in the Anglo-Scottish Cup that won Cluffy his first trophy.
I think I played left wing. I think Robbo came off and I come in on left wing. And I came on and I never gave the ball away. And then I got absolute rollicking at the end of the game off Cluffy because I didn't take anybody on. Oh. I said, I didn't give the ball away, boss. Yes, but you didn't take anybody on. So was it 6-1 or 6-something?
Let me have a look.
It
was Orient.
Orient,
December 76. Yes.
I think we won.
And you did win. It was quite a convincing victory, actually. Mm. Here we go. I've got the cutting here. The headline is Rampant Reds Take Cup in Style. Forest 4, Orient 0.
It was 6 in my head. So, yeah.
But another clean sheet.
Yeah, yeah. Who was in goal then?
Let's have a look. I've got the line up there. So it's Middleton, Anderson, Clark, McGovern, Lloyd Chapman, O'Neill, Barrett, Bowery.
Burt Bowery. Yeah,
Burt Bowery, Bowyer, Robertson, and then in brackets, Gunn, because you came on as sub for him.
Robbo, yeah. Well, John Middleton, I used to be in digs with him, but he sadly died a few years ago now. But yeah, I remember that game.
Well, I remember as a young lad, I could name the team off the top of my head. It was always Middleton, Anderson, Clark, McGovern, Lloyd Burns, etc., etc. And then, of course, Shilton eventually arrived.
Peter Wells used to play as well for
a bit.
And
Peter Wells, that's right.
I still see him now, and he's Nottingham still.
Yes.
He's from Clifton. Yeah. There was three from Clifton. It was Viv Anderson, Pete Wells and a man called Glyn Saunders, all on the Clifton estate.
As we mentioned, you played alongside Robertson as well as replacing him in that match. Could you tell, even at an early stage like that, the talent that he had and what he might become?
Well, if you didn't know Robbo, you'd think he's anything but a footballer. He had the knack of just catching on the hop and putting the ball in. He'd take a penalty left or right foot, corners left or right foot. Not many people do that now.
There was another match I'm going to mention here. It was February 76, a friendly against one of your old local sides in Northamptonshire, Corby Town.
Corby Town, yeah.
Do you remember? And it was a friendly, and I think Cluffy was switching on the new floodlights or something like that, and you were playing in that game.
I think I got took off at half-time.
Did you?
Yeah. I think I gave a penalty away, and I got took off, so that didn't impress me or impress somebody, but he also took Martin O'Neill off at his home ground. I think he took Liam off at his home ground in Ireland. So I don't know if it was a thing, but he took me off. I remember because all my family turned up and I didn't come out second half. But that was, due respect, that was typical of Cluffy to do something like that.
Yes.
Again, grounded. Keep you grounded, maybe.
Yeah. In the report, it says you tugged somebody's shirt, I think, and it led to the penalty.
I remember what he said. He said, if you hadn't have tugged him, you still got a score. You know, but you've tugged him and given him an easier chance, really. And he was right. You know, I got caught wrong, so I just pulled him back. I might have got away with it nowadays, the wrestling they do.
You were unlucky then, I guess.
Well, I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't miss a trick, does he, Cluffy?
No. Now, I know Cluffy loved his cricket, and you're passionate about it as well, aren't you?
I love me cricket. I think football was me job, but cricket was me the love of, you know. Cluffy played with us a few times. As I was saying, he opened the batting, opened the bowling, stood at slip all game, didn't run for one ball, just told you to run for it. But we had a few games. We played at Trent Bridge, played at Derby. Jeff Boycott was his big mate. I played when I was 15. I played for Northants Seconds at Oxford. So I could do a little bit. Daughter's played for England. She's got 3 World Cups, winners medals.
It's Jenny, isn't it?
Jenny.
How proud of her were you when you saw that?
I'm very proud of her. I'm more proud of her than anything I've ever done. You know, I get more nervous watching her than anything I've ever done. My son plays indoor cricket for England as well, so it's a big thing in my house, cricket.
Yeah.
You know, I could watch every ball of cricket, but I still got to watch 5 minutes of football nowadays. It's completely changed.
Well, that's part one of my conversation with Bryn Gunn. Coming up in part two, reflections of a loyal defender who Cluffy could rely on.
I've never classed myself as one of the big boys, as in Burnsy, Lloydy, Shields, Fiv, but I could always come in and do a job. Arguably, I was at the club too long. Maybe I should have gone somewhere else, but I was happy, you know, I was happy doing what I was doing.
Plus, memories of winning the European Cup, followed by Cluffy's curfew.
Cluffy's give the usual, nobody's going out tonight. We're going to go back, think what you've achieved, see you in the morning. So anyway, we all get back on the bus. We go back into the hills. The big boys, Lloydy, Burnsy, Shields, Fiv, all down the fire escape, taxi into Madrid. And me and John O'Hare, we stayed in the hotel and had a few drinks, raided the kitchen.
Hello everyone, I'm Martin O'Neill. You're listening to the Green Jumper podcast with Marcus Alton from brianclough.com.
Thanks for listening, and if you've enjoyed this episode, please give The Green Jumper a 5-star rating and visit the Tribute website, where you can read more stories and buy souvenirs and books supporting good causes. They'll also help the running costs of the podcast and the website. I hope you can join me next time for part 2 of my conversation with Bryn Gunn and more memories of the great man in the Green Jumper.